joining us tonight.
Tonight, we have six prominent panelists representing different modes of practice and or industry with us to share their views. Each of the six panelists have built successful businesses in their own unique way.
They're more than just big idea people. They're implementers. They've rolled up their sleeves and worked hard to see their model of optometry become successful. It's that experience and knowledge that we are so excited to tap into tonight. Independent optometrists are increasingly under threat, and many wonder about the future of our independence and whether or not that can be maintained. We're looking forward to hearing how each of them address these threats, and just as importantly, areas where they can see opportunity.
So what does the future of independent optometry look like? No one has a crystal ball, but the thought leaders on the webinar tonight will undoubtedly challenge us and make us think more critically so we can at least be better prepared for the future. Again, thanks for joining us.
We will now introduce the six panelists. So when I mention your name to the panelists online, please take a few moments to introduce yourselves to the audience. First off, we have Dr. Darian Engel.
Hi there. My name is Dr. Darian Engel. I'm a graduate of the University of Waterloo, 2001. I've been with Iris since 2002, starting as a practicing optometrist, being a partner in locations. I became vice president in 06, executive vice president in 2014, and then chairman of the board of directors in August 2014. And I'm very happy to be on this panel.
Next up, we have Mr. Ken Barbette.
Hi, I'm Ken Barbette. I've been with iRecommend as CEO for approximately 8 years since 2009. Previous to that, I have 30 years of retail experience. I've worked in the grocery, the pharmacy, the travel, liquor, and a number of other industries, as well as being on this on the manufacturing side when I ran Big Rock Brewery. So I think I have a different kind of expertise than the rest of the panel. Thank you.
And we have Pierre Bertrand. Pierre, first maybe kick off. Let the group know where you're calling in from and what time it is there.
A very good morning from Croatia. It's about 2 a.m. And I'm very proud to represent our 1,000 Essilor Canadian employees. I joined Essilor in the United States in 2011. I've been privileged to lead Essilor Canada since 31 months now. And as Ken said, I also bring some experience from outside of our industry, notably 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry.
Next, we have Dr. Sheldon Saliba.
Hi, Sheldon Saliba here. I am in private practice in Hamilton, Ontario, been in practice there for about 15 years. And yeah, just full scope optometry practice, and glad to be here tonight with everybody.
And Dr. Altaz Shajani.
Hi, I graduated from New England College of Optometry in 1999, and I bought an existing practice in North Van after 2 years. We grew out of the space very quickly, and then 10 years ago, I moved to a location about three times the size across the street. Our special interest is high-end eyewear, vision therapy, ortho-K, ocular nutrition, and dry eye. And we built our reputation on being early adopters of new technology and offering exemplary customer service. My life purpose is to inspire others to find the greatness within them and help them reach their true potential.
And last but not least, we have Dr. Al Alsifer. Al, thank you so much for joining us. And we completely understand if you do need to go. Al, would you like to share with the audience what's happening?
Sure. Thanks. So my mother's taken ill and not expected to make it too long. So I'm just with her. So I may have to step off suddenly. So if I leave you, it doesn't mean the conversation was boring. Thanks very much for inviting me to this. Excited to talk about the future of the profession. I'm Al Alsifer, CEO and chair of FY Doctors, a company started 9 years ago. Before that, I practiced optometry for 4 years in Airdrie and 12 years in Grand Prairie, Alberta. Our company has over 200 locations owned by optometrists, as well as we acquired Vision Source Canada from Vision Source US about 3 years ago, and there's about 80 locations in that. We also operate a manufacturing freeform lab and distribution center in Burnaby, Delta, British Columbia, and our manufacturers for Zeiss branded product.
Thank you.
So there will be two ways for the audience to interact with us this evening. If you have a question you can submit to, or that you want to submit to the panelists, you can do so by clicking on the Q&A button, which is usually sort of in the Zoom window on the top left of your screen.
We will also be conducting a few quick polls. They will pop up on your screen. When they appear, please take a moment to vote, and we'll share the results immediately afterwards. Poll number one, do you practice within an independent optometric setting?
So hopefully the poll popped up for the audience. Okay, so we've had 100 votes.
Great.
So we had 62% yes and 39% no. Okay, so we'll go on to our first question here. So we'll start with the first question directed towards Ken Barbette and Dr. Al Ulsifer and Pierre Bertrand. How will supplier-side integrations such as the recent merger of Luxottica and Essilor affect independent optometrists? Ken, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, supplier consolidation has been happening for quite a while now, and I believe that a strong and healthy supplier community is critical to long-term success. Each time a merger happens, it reduces the competitiveness of the industry. But having a variety of choices to purchase from creates balance. And with that balance, innovation and cost effectiveness thrive. Some of the side effects of a merger are sometimes there's less rep coverage, so there's dual reps now covering single territories. Product priority shifts, so in a bigger company, sometimes products don't come to the surface. And a combined cost cutting. So there is always in a merger some attempt to contain costs and cut costs. So in the short term, these mergers will likely not affect the independent OD. It's more likely to affect the companies merging as they cope through the changeover. Longer term, the outcome really depends on the independent optometrist and how they decide to react to a merger. Those independents that take the necessary steps will be protected. They'll be fine. They don't need to be trapped up in long-term agreements that tie them up into any sort of fixed behavior. They can always use a variety of suppliers, and they should use a variety of suppliers. Being willing to change suppliers and not get caught up in the Me Too approach. So the idea that if one frame line is a big brand, not everyone has to carry that brand. Always be using two or three labs or two or three contact lens companies so you're not dependent on any single one of them. Because there are less of them, it's easy to cut with only one. And you want to be careful, that's not good for competition. So always be willing to try a new company. Thanks.
Al, do you want to add your two cents?
Sure. I agree in the short term, not really too much to expect. I think in the longer term, you know, the big question is that it is a question, as it's a bit of unknown. You know, what I'm hearing from people, I guess, out there is, well, you've got the two largest players, you know, in the industry, not by a little bit, but by a long shot, that, you know, have control of internet, that have control of manufacturing, you know, and multiple chains that have the biggest retail organization in the world and a strong balance sheet. So, you know, for me to speculate on what might happen down the road, you know, would probably be difficult to do. Having said that, I think it would be fair to say that people are nervous. The one thing I do know for sure is that, you know, both of these companies are publicly traded companies, and publicly traded companies have an obligation to grow. That doesn't mean they're bad companies, but that's their obligation. And the only way you can grow is by increasing the market. So hopefully out of this merger, there's more people getting their eyes checked more often, you know, purchasing more product. Having failed that, and our industry hasn't done a good job of that over the last 5 to 10 years of growing the market, having failed that, the only way to grow is by, you know, growing market share. And that certainly has could have an impact on independent optometry. The challenge for independent optometry is resources and infrastructure and the new shift to, you know, what other new disruptive technologies and so on are out there. And, you know, it is more difficult as individuals to react to that. I agree, though, it's not doom and gloom. I think, you know, it's going to be brought up possibly later, but differentiating yourself is going to be more and more critical for independent.
Thanks, Al. Pierre, as you know, we're represented in Canada, one of the largest companies involved in one of the most sort of recent and biggest mergers in our space ever. I think we're very curious to hear what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, so it's been great to hear my two counterparts' insights. As you may imagine, we've had a few conversations about this. You know, and really, at Essilor, we're constantly looking at the market, trying to meet the needs of today and anticipate tomorrow. when we look at it globally, we see 7 billion people in the world that have visual needs, either correction or protection. And 2.5 billion of those suffer from uncorrected vision problems. And what's great about working for Essilor is that we have a great mission and that we set ambitious goals. And in fact, we believe that eradicating poor vision globally in one generation is possible. And even in Canada, we estimate that there are approximately 5 million Canadians that need vision correction and don't have it today. This is a big untapped potential for our industry. And to capture that, to follow on our mission, which is improving lives by improving sight, this is the driving force behind everything we do. And so the combination of Essilor and Luxottica really has one simple motivation, which is to better respond to the needs of an immense global population in vision correction and vision protection by bringing together two great companies, one dedicated to lenses, the other dedicated to frames. And by joining these companies, joining these forces, Essilor and Luxottica can now accelerate the global potential to the benefit of customers, employees, and the industry as a whole. So we see this combination as sending a really positive signal, a positive signal about the untapped potential of our business, which we believe has the potential to triple. We see this as a sign of sustainable investment and accelerated innovation. These are all great and very positive things, and I know that we're going to continue to talk about this for weeks and months to come.
Okay, now I think we'll now have a chance. Maybe we'll pull the audience, what impact they think consolidation on the supplier side will have on independent optometry in the next 3 years. So I'll get that poll up. Everyone a minute to vote. A couple more seconds and then we'll close it. And if we can show the results. Yeah, so the majority of folks think it's going to have a negative effect. So maybe Pierre, back to you just as a follow-up to that. I think there's a lot of independents fear that the bigger entity of Essilor and Luxottica, that they see that as maybe competition instead of synergy. Right now, there's B2B where a lot of folks on the line do business with Essilor on a B2B basis. Luxottica again has a B2C focus directly to consumer. How do you allay the fears of independence that this bigger entity may become a bigger competitor?
Well, obviously that concern is something that we've heard, but to be perfectly frank, we've seen a much more balanced conversation with our customers, because ultimately this is a market that has so much potential, but to unlock that potential, we need to think beyond. I think Essilor has got a pretty consistent track record when it comes to growth of the industry and focusing on developing that untapped potential. I know from the conversations I've had that we continue to be optimistic, we continue to be positive. But I think what this poll shows is that conversation needs to continue. And as we go along here, I think it's also important to remember that this combination is not approved yet. And so it's very, very early for us to even start to speculate about the impact in the future.
Okay, thanks for that follow-up.
Okay, so now we're going to switch gears. The next question. A number of independent practices have joined corporate groups such as Iris, FYI, and New Look. Are they doing so out of fear or out of opportunity? I'm going to ask Darian Engel and Dr. Al Alsifer to give us their answers. So, Darian, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'd say my hope is that anyone who joins a group such as IRIS, they're doing so with the intent of grabbing a great opportunity to grow under a brand that represents optometry. For 26 years, IRIS has really been founded on the idea that optometry will only survive in a consolidating market if optometrists unite under a brand that can be easily communicated to the public, based on really foundational elements of quality eye care, passion, honesty, and respect. So opportunity, I think there's a lot, and definitely you need to select a group that aligns with your own values as a practitioner. But I can sense certainly a lot of fear out there. You know, you never want to make a decision involving your livelihood, your business, your practice out of fear alone, because you'll never be happy. You'll be always in a reactive or defensive mode. But if you see that there is, you know, a future where, you know, you can align yourself with a group that really allows you to practice in a way that, you know, you see yourself being able to sleep at night and provide excellent care to your patients during the day, then that is where you need to make your decision. But in terms of the reality of the market, I mean, you know, we started the brand to really grow as a way to ensure that optometry can succeed in a changing marketplace. And if you don't align yourself with the brand, there is risk for sure. I mean, you can't be everything to everyone when it comes to a business. You can't be the best social media marketer. You can't have the same buying power. I mean, you can join buying groups, but just to sort of counterpoint, you know, what Ken was saying, yeah, you can certainly, you know, have many different lens suppliers, but you have to look at, are you leveraging your purchasing power to the best benefit? Or in the case of some of you know, our other panelists there, you know, maybe you have your own lab that you're using to ensure that you've got good margin. Because in the end, it comes down to the margins. I mean, you have this big consolidation on supplier side. Well, yeah, you know, I've actually been asked by the Competition Bureau of Canada what we think about it. And I think that in the end, it's going to be a neutral response because there's going to be other opportunities, but you need to have the ability to negotiate and be at the table. And so if there's something that, you know, happens with a larger supplier side that you're like, you know what, I don't really like that, or I don't really like the pricing you're giving me, you've got, you know, a much bigger voice if you're working with a larger group. And it's easier to have a voice with a larger group if that larger group is cohesive. And this is why we think a harmonized brand is the best approach for eye care.
Thanks, Darian. And Al, do you have anything to add?
I think Darian gave a great answer. You know, with respect to being collaborative with optometry, the question is how deep do you need to go given the changing marketplace? So, you know, there's new competitors, there's technology, there's omni-channel. How are we going to solve the new demands of the shopper around making our experience much more simpler, much more easy, much more cohesive? And that's difficult to do as an independent practitioner. I kind of want to jump to the definition of corporate optometry, because it's one that, you know, we keep being defined as corporate optometry. And, you know, we're a company that's owned by optometrists. So we have over 500 optometrists now in the organization, and a very unique structure, but it's controlled, driven, and owned by doctors. And, you know, we saw consolidation happening way back. That's part of the reason for us getting together. And what we're seeing in the U.S. and other places is private equity consolidation, you know, publicly traded companies, so on and so forth. And we said, look, if there's an opportunity to consolidate, if it's going to happen anyways, why can't a bunch of doctors do it? So for us, I agree with Darian, it's really about how do we ensure that doctors, and I'm going to, you know, coin the term dependent doctors. So there's independent doctors, there's corporate entities out there. I think of ourselves as dependent doctors. Alone, you know, we're at risk. Together, we can form a very, very powerful, you know, vertically integrated organization that can meet the challenges and still meet, you know, what optometry looks like to us, you know, around technology, around what does an eye exam look like. And, you know, a big enough organization can define what an eye exam looks like in the Canadian market. So, obviously, to me, it's an opportunity. I've never considered, you know, buying groups or independent doctors competition. It's really what do we need to do as an organization, you know, to prosper in an ever-changing marketplace. So for me, it's opportunity all the way, and maybe necessity.
Thanks, Al.
Just to remind folks that If you think of a question, anytime during the presentation, just type it in the Q&A section. We'll try to get to as many as we can at the end. So question number three, independent optometrists typically derive most of their income from retail. And given the rapidly changing retail landscape, with many bricks and mortar stores closing or significantly paring down the number of stores, for example, all these logos you see on the screen have shut down in 2017, many, many of their stores. What do independent optometrists need to do so they do not get caught up in the sea change we are experiencing? So this question will be addressed by Dr. Sheldon Saliba and Mr. Ken Barbette. So Sheldon, did you want to answer this one first for us?
Sure, I can. You know, I think there's lots of opportunities for independent optometrists. And when I look at that list of stores that are consolidating and closing, it doesn't really cause that much fear for me. I think we need to know, like, the target patient that we're looking to take care of and serve in our practices and focus on them. For myself, it's meant bringing in an employee that does full-time marketing for me, and I'm interested in building a brand. I'm interested in having a social media presence and an online presence that people can go and figure out what type of experience they're going to have in my practice, and getting that specific target patient to walk through the door. And then once they're in the door, I want to know everything there is to know about what they do with their lifestyle, with their work. I want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to connect with them. So in my practice in particular, I've chosen to focus on the luxury eyewear market. We do high-end contact lenses, volume supplies of contact lenses, and obviously high-quality eye exams with technology. So those are kind of the three core pillars of what we're delivering for people in our office, and it's not for everybody, but I think there's a marketplace for it, and you don't have to focus on those things, but I think people are looking for individualized, customized experiences. They're looking for people that are beyond friendly, wanting to get to know them, educate them. And if you're providing all of those things and a good product, I don't think it really matters what's happening competition-wise, because you're just driving yourself full steam ahead in that type of environment.
Okay, thanks, Sheldon. Ken, what are your thoughts on the changes that are facing the broader retail side, and what do we need to do as optometrists to avoid, you know, some of the fate that you see on the brands on the screen?
I'm going to come at it, I agree with a lot of what Sheldon said, but I'm going to come at a different direction. So for me, you know, being a long-term retail person, retail is always evolving and changing. So the main reason usually a retailer fails is that they're slow, or they refuse to evolve with what the customer needs and wants are. So they're either too big and they think it's too hard to change, or they stubbornly hold on to an image that's out of date. When I look at some of those on the screen, I see a picture of some of those, I say that person is not what the model of today's consumer would want to be. So I think that for an existing optometrist who's looking to see are they relevant to the marketplace, they need to measure everything to make sure they understand the trends. And so a lot of times, you know, optometrists aren't measuring customer satisfaction. They really need to measure this. They need to hold on to it very tightly to see that consumers are still liking what they're experiencing at their office. Sales by dollars, but also sales by units. So it's not enough that your sales by dollars are going up. Your units have to be growing as well. It's a real key difference between the two. So is it inflation or is it real growth? Patient retention, you need to be at 85% patient retention. If you're less than 85, you're bleeding patients because they're unhappy with something in your practice. As far as purchase retention, I think you need to be at least 75% purchase retention. So that is of the people that you ask to buy something, 75% of them do. Otherwise, that's been a lot of work and not for a lot of results. I think that one of the things optometrists can do is they can visit a all their competitors every 6 months. And for lack of a better term, steal good ideas. That's what retailers have always done. They steal good ideas from one another. So understand what someone else is being successful at. Look to see how you could remodel that in your practice. Understand their own value proposition. I think Sheldon said this very well. You don't want to be something you're not. You can't be something to everyone. So choose what your value proposition is. Make sure you stick to that. Do something that I think is different. Go for an eye exam somewhere else. You know, most optometrists won't do that, but I think that you'll see that by doing that, they get a much better example of what the actual patient or customer feels about the experience. So I think that they always need to ask why things are done, and they can compare themselves to other similar industries to see what that looks like. So I think those are all important in making sure that optometrists don't fall in the same way of other struggling retailers. Thank you.
Okay, thanks Jeff, very much.
Sorry. Santina, can I just add a comment? This is Alpesh Ajani.
Yeah, go ahead.
I also wanted to say that consumers still want to engage in the five senses when buying. So fortunately, eyewear, unlike contact lenses, is not a commodity. It's far more personable. So consumers will continue for some time to come to the office and emotionally engage as people buy with emotion and justify with logic. One more comment is that the responsibility moving forward is for optometrists to differentiate the refraction from the internal eye health exam, reminding patients while sitting in the exam chair, the most important reason why they should return every single year is to preserve their eyesight, which is related to their independence. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, now for our next question. The buzz phrase in retail at present is creating a memorable customer experience. What opportunities exist for optometrists to create great experiences? And Altez, we're going to direct this to you as well as Darian. So Altez, may we start with you?
Sure. First and foremost, to create a great customer experience, you need to get out of the transactional thinking mode. I think most businesses act in a transactional way. In other words, they treat everyone like a product. I think the key is to understand that everyone that engages your brand has a life cycle. And within this life cycle, there are touch points. The key is to maximize these touch points. Also, never forget to find out things like birthdays, anniversaries, milestones, and build programs around these events. Make every person who engages your brand a brand ambassador who will tell your brand story in a positive, engaging way. Also, reflect your purpose and values in everything you do. At our clinic, we have created an atmosphere that has genuine positive energy with making people feel comfortable and good about themselves. So when they enter, we offer an espresso specialty coffee or a David's tea or a juice box to a child. And we also have snacks in the patient lounge as well as all the exam rooms. With new pediatric patients, I perform a little magic trick to break the ice. I may sing a song during retinoscopy to keep them focused. We present a little certificate congratulating them on their first exam with a goodie bag when they leave, including a pair of sunglasses. I think we also need to be noticeably ahead of the curve for technology. We introduced Optos 8 years prior to anyone in our area, which helped us differentiate ourselves. Currently, we're the only practice offering IPL in BC with lid expression for MGD. And this has helped garnish a lot of optometry referrals. Slowly over time, we've also switched to more exclusive frame lines. And with the help of Mark Hinton scripting, we've created an air of expertise beyond average and provided gift certificates for customers to come back with added frequency and savings. We also take the time to connect with patients on an emotional level. We genuinely care and listen to our patients. And if needed, sometimes I'll take an extra 10 minutes to chat with the patient about something that's troubling them personally or something they're excited about sharing. I feel like because of all these things that we're doing, even though we have a business that's 25 years old, we've increased our business by 70% in the last 5 years. Thank you.
Wow, that's fantastic, Altez. Ken had mentioned that we should each visit another office. Well, Altez, can I book an appointment?
Anytime.
And now, Darian, can you share your thoughts, please?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there are endless opportunities to create great experiences and locations. I think the key is, I mean, all those things that Altez shared were wonderful. The key is, can you do this consistently, systematically, and making sure that, you know, the experience that your patients have is the same from each visit to the next, and that their friends, family members have the same experience. So consistency is king in retail. And then to do that, as Ken had mentioned before, you need to track. You have to have systems in place to track. I mean, for us, we define the customer experience as a nine stage iris experience, which really digs into each touch point with the client or with the patient from the time they call in, time they book, come in, pre-testing. And then where the big opportunities exist are in the simple stuff, like using someone's name at least three times. If anyone has taken Dale Carnegie or read a Dale Carnegie book, you know, that's the sweetest sound anyone can hear in the English language is their own name. So using someone's name really personalizes that experience. But really, as an eye care professional, you have access to amazing information, not only about the eye health, about the family history. You have opportunities to really get a sense of what activities they're doing with their job, with their hobbies, and really integrate not all those pieces of information about someone's lifestyle into their eye health, into their prescription options. But if you do that in a team environment, by empowering your team, making sure that the patient doesn't just see you, the doctor, as the expert in all things, but that there's a team approach to providing a solution to all the either the problems that they have or an enhancement to the way of life by using eye care products, services, and other ways, then you're really going to create an aspirational experience for that customer. So there's a lot that can be done in customer experience, but the key is how do you scale that even within one office amongst all the individuals working, not just the doctor, but the opticians, the dispensing staff, reception, and how do you do that consistently over time? And you need to have those tools, those definitions, and those best practices in place, and you need to be able to innovate all the time when it comes to that. And for us, again, I come back to the benefit of being part of a large group is that you can share best practices. And if you're doing the same consistent procedures, then it's easier to share best practices because your offices have a similar makeup and look. And that harmonization is really the key in terms of breaking through when it comes to all that's out there in terms of the options a patient has, whether that be the net or a colleague or a retail chain. But I go here, I get this experience, and I get it every single time. And that's really the power that having a brand and having a harmonized customer experience really is.
Thank you, Darren. Great points.
I think I've heard some business lectures before, but someone said the one and only business book you need to read is the Dale Carnegie book. And that was written, I think, in 1935 or something like that.
I agree 100%.
Before we move to the next question, it's Pierre Bertrand here. I wanted to add just one piece. I think what's been said was spot on. But one piece that I think we need to also remember is the fact that, the experience is linked to that customer and our customers are changing. There's been a sea change in the customer and the staff that we have, right? As we've moved from Gen X to Gen Y and millennials. And so I think that we need to keep in mind the fact that the way that they experience your product, services, and prices is changing. We also believe very strongly that while we can learn from each other, we also need to keep our eyes on industries outside of our own because, ultimately the customer's expectations are based not only on the experience in our store, but what's outside of there. So, this is why at Essilor Canada, we've really invested strongly to bring best practices to our customers from outside the industry. So, for example, we've had Ritz-Carlton come in and discuss how they build a service excellence culture. In the fall, we're gonna have Mercedes come in and talk about how they promote and reinforce premium to their customer base. And last but not least, we're bringing in Jason Dorsey to go across the country with us because he's a preeminent leader in millennials, Gen Y, and how to market to these folks. So I think that we need to think broadly and make sure that we're very, very well positioned for the customer of yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Thanks, Pierre.
So the independent practitioner that seems to be, I guess, the most precarious position would be the solo doctor, the solo practitioner. Costs continue to rise. Revenues stay stagnant for a lot of folks. So what options should the single practice, the solo doctors, consider to reduce this risk to their future? So we'll have three panelists answer this question. Dr. Al Alsifer, Mr. Ken Barbette and Dr. Darian Engel. So, Al, did you want to start us off on this?
Sure. I mean, look, at we don't want to create scare tactics and think the solo practitioner, you know, his day is over. And some fantastic points throughout the call on differentiation, creating that relationship with the patient, defining, you know, how you're different, having, you know, the courage to kind of move on and invest in yourselves. But, you know, there's some economic advantages certainly to being with a group practice. So, you know, being with a group obviously affords some scale, some opportunity to have better lifestyle and do some of the things that are so important to the consumers. So, you know, I've been in all disciplines, kind of the small practice, practice up to 13 optometrists in one location. And certainly, you know, they're, you know, creating local brands, creating local market share by getting together to me and obviously kind of staked, you know, my whole career in optometrists working together. So I believe wherever possible, multi-doctor is the way to go.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Ken, do you want to add your thoughts on that?
Sure. I guess I think that being a solo OD can be just as rewarding as profitable as a multi-doctor practice. I think being a solo practitioner is a lifestyle choice that someone makes. I think there's a couple of things that a solo practitioner has to do if they want to be able to maintain the same lifestyle or earning level as they have. I think they need to think about a locum OD when they go on vacation so that their patients still have someone to see. I think they need to play to their strengths. So the big thing about a solo practitioner is the community and the personalization that OD can have. So they can do things that a group practice can't do, that with the number of people that are working. It's a much more personal service. I think they need to make sure they keep their exam fee at the top end of the range, because they are offering something that's different from a bigger solution with multi-doctors. Not that that's bad, it's just different. And I think they need to maximize their OD effectiveness. So we have some practices in some remote spots where they have trouble getting associates. They've moved to using a scribe system, or you can move to a pager system to make sure the doctor is more effective in their time in the office, making sure to minimize the amount of time that the doctor is wasting. And then the other thing that they can do is offer other services that can be managed by their staff. So things that they can draw other revenue into their practice, and you've heard some of those talked about tonight, that can be managed by your staff that still bring revenue into your practice. And so obviously the execution of the exam and capturing that sale is more important. So you have to work on that part of it very strongly. And I think, you know, and other people have said this, I think it's important to be part of some kind of practice management group, whether it's a buying group like ours or whether someone else. I think you need that help with the marketing and being able to get that, gain that size to be able to do it more affordably. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. To wrap this question up, Darian, what are your thoughts around the options that solo ODs have to survive?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm biased because, you know, Iris is a large group, and I think that as our scope expands, the demands on, you know, individual optometrists are just going to be increasing. I mean, when it comes to after hours, being on call, you know, different aspects of medical might be bleeding into the next subject there, but it's certainly having more colleagues and a larger network to rely on is important, as well as the other benefits when it comes to the operational side. But if you are going to be a solo practitioner, I think the key is differentiation on a very specialized level. I've seen some very successful individual practitioners, you know, do vision therapy or other specialized specialized areas of optometry, and really just focus on that and finding a niche that, you know, makes sense, that no other colleague is offering, and that even receive referrals from other optometrists because of their expertise being so good, and in an area that certainly is in demand for patient care, but also there is the financial viability of that particular specialty, because I think that's important. I think if you do become more specialized in order to really differentiate yourself as a solo practitioner, you need to really look at, you know, the numbers and see, is this going to be viable for me? Am I going to be able to do it? Because certainly if there's the demand, you know, you'll have the volume, but you need to make sure that you also have the have everything else figured out when it comes to expenses and profitability.
So maybe, Darian, just follow up to that. Do you think, and maybe to Al and Ken, do you think that to be a solar practitioner, you have to have the entrepreneur gene in your DNA baked in? Like, do you think people that go and set up their own clinic and want to be their own boss, do you think that type of person is now someone who's a hardcore entrepreneur and is really going to put their nose to the grindstone?
This is Ken here. I would say yes. I think that those are the people who know that they want to be in practice on their own, and they're not interested in a partner or anything else. They are the entrepreneur by definition, I would say.
And not only that, you're going to have to be a pretty darn good entrepreneur in this day and age when it comes to, you know, all the different hats you're going to have to wear. So it's definitely, you're going to have to be tough as nails into that. However, again, the more specialized and the more in demand your skills are, there's less pressure on that, especially if you can have interprofessional referral.
Great. Now, 2/3 of the average optometrist's gross revenue has historically been derived from product sales, and 1/3 from professional services. Do you think the move away from retail and towards a more medical model is the magic bullet to insulate ourselves from the coming tide of change? What risks and opportunities do you see for practitioners that are shifting their practice in this direction? For this last question, we'll hear from Pierre, Sheldon, and Altez. Pierre, can you start us off? Are we still with you?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think on this one, there really is no magic bullet in this industry. Evolution is inevitable, and we have to embrace change in order to be successful. You know, the business world is changing dramatically in every segment, and ultimately it's about reaching out to customers in meaningful ways and providing a unique experience. However, I think it's only fair to say that, you know, Essilor, we're not ODs, nor do we own practices. What we can do is humbly share our knowledge and bring best practices from outside the industry. There are so many new solutions and technologies today that can create value for ODs to sell lenses, contact lenses, and then additional vision care services such as vision therapy, eye health protection, prevention, etc. You know, to me, it's a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating time to be in this industry. You know, and I'll give you another example. In the fall, we will be bringing Dr. Justin Bazan up from New York to share his thoughts. You know, I think that he's truly embraced social media as a way to engage his customer base, his client base, to share new products and services. And he's built a tremendous practice in Brooklyn as a result. And, you know, I think we need to figure out ways to really accelerate our sharing of these ideas. And I think that's the way that we're going to do great. You know, I hate to steal a quote from Warby Parker, but there was a great one earlier this week where Neil Blumenthal said, "Retail isn't dead. Mediocre retail is dead." And I think that's something that we need to remember to continuously take our performance to the next level. There are some great ideas in our industry. We need to learn from each other and build on each other.
Excellent point, Pierre. And I think you're right. Justin is certainly one to watch. Sheldon, what would you like to say?
I would say that I can see both risk and opportunity with a shift towards medical eye care. I guess the opportunity I see is that, you know, when you're helping patients in that way, you're really forming a close connection and bond with them. And when you can help somebody when they're hurting, you likely are making patients for life. But the risk is the control that can exist with a more medical model of eye care in Canada. Traditionally, we're not really reimbursed at levels. If it becomes government funded where it makes it viable to provide high quality services. So I'd see that as a risk. But I also, you know, I get concerned that we're forgetting about sort of our retail roots. And, you know, everybody seems to be giving up on contact lenses. I think that there are ways to market yourself and strategies to really grow those categories. And there are certainly two areas of our core business that I'm really interested in. I'm having a lot of fun with contact lenses now. We're getting such amazing products that are coming to market that, you know, people can't even tell that they're wearing contact lenses anymore. They've gotten to a point where they're so comfortable. And I feel like we have tools in place that can make us extremely competitive. Like my contact lens practice is growing at an astonishing pace this year. And I don't know, I'm kind of positive about the retail aspect of what we're doing as optometrists. I don't think it's, I'm not as concerned about all of these changes that are sort of on the horizon at the moment.
Well, Sheldon, I think it's because you're doing a lot of things right. Altaz, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Sheldon. We have the advantage as independent practitioners to have the best of both worlds, retail and medical. Why would we pigeonhole ourselves into one category or the other, or deny ourselves the benefits of either one? I think to maximize our success in business, we can maximize our opportunities in both arenas. A small percentage of ODs will thrive in optical, who have unique and exclusive frame collections, who provide exemplary service and have a deep connection with their patients. The medical model alone won't cut it. As an example, in the US with the continuing reductions in medical reimbursements, many primary care physicians have closed their private practice and joined groups or hospitals because they couldn't afford the wages for their office personnel. Future growth for independent ODs is likely in niche services such as dry eye, specialty contacts, ortho K and myopia control, and vision therapy. For some of my friends, this is their number one source of revenue, and profitability is much higher, but you really have to plant a flag with that niche. For us, those combined revenue streams still don't match what we do in optical, but it's becoming a bigger piece of the revenue pie each year as we attract patients from further and further distances. What's exciting is in the near future, genetics, customized ocular nutrition, wearable technology, virtual reality, and 3D printing will also play an important role. Doing what you're passionate about is most important, and that's the primary reason we started offering these niche services, and then eventually we were making a healthy profit to support our future growth. Binocular vision dysfunction is a larger issue than previously considered, especially with the prevalence of concussions. Many patients with these issues go to their neurologist, their physiotherapist, and family practitioner, searching for relief. Coordinating with these specialists to alert them that their patient may suffer from BV issues provides an opportunity for the optometrist to potentially provide immediate relief. Consumers who are also patients buy from people they like. They buy from people who are passionate and not simply driven by the bottom line. The new generations want to do business with businesses who give back to the underserved or underprivileged. And my passion will continue to evaluate how we will contribute and give back and how we will voice this in the future of social media. Thank you.
Great job, Altaz. I think that sums up a lot of what we need to do. We're going to end now with a poll question. To what extent will revenue from medical eye care approach or exceed that of retail dispensing within the next 3 years?
Maybe I'll get our poll. The person doing the polls in the back end is just going to flip me a quick message. 66%.
Not close.
1/3 close.
Okay,
interesting. So again, instructions for submitting questions. Again, the Q&A button in the top left corner of your screen is where you want to do that. We don't have a lot of time left. I think we're closing off at 9. We've got 5 minutes left. So maybe we'll just...
Okay, I'll start with
We'll toss up maybe one or two questions.
Okay, first question. I know that some of our younger associates, they're seeing our newer patients, and especially those that are millennials, and they're finding it's harder to sell to them. Do any of our panelists have ideas on how to sell to millennials? Anyone want to start with that one off?
I could start. I think millennials certainly as a market segment have, they're the new consumer in terms of their buying power, and they really do look for organizations that share their values. So I think having defined values is going to be important, because they're going to search for a place to do their eye care business that fits with their own value system. At the same time, they're also brand oriented. You need to have relevant brands. but it's really understanding them. They need to be listened to. They need to be heard. But you know what? Every human being does. Maybe the boomers just kind of grew up in a time where nobody did listen as well. But you just need with millennials to ask the right questions, listen to them, and really customize what it is you're going to do for them or provide for them in their terms and how, you know, how is it going to benefit them in their lifestyle and their job and what they like to do. And this to me is universal. I think millennials just are living a more idealized version of what way we should be treating all human beings. So I think if you're able to crack the millennial code, it's going to help you with all demographic segments, but it really does put you on your toes in terms of, you know, making sure that you're asking the questions, listening and providing solutions, but at the same time, demonstrating values that will fit with those customers.
Thanks, Darren. That was a great answer.
Maybe I'll pose this to Altaz. Everyone online has probably seen in the last week or two, Warby Parker has announced they're launching an online eye examination that they've been working on for the past 2 years. And Altaz, you made an interesting comment where you split apart the refraction from the ocular health assessment. How do you view this new sort of online eye exam that Warby Parker is going to be rolling out?
That's a good question. It's, you know, I think for me, I have a lot, I see a lot of kids, and because I do vision therapy, that helps me with them. And then I see a lot of boomers. So I think it's going to be a challenge. I think one thing is to give back to the community. I think that's what Gen Y and Gen Z like. They are very pleased purchasing internet eyewear. And I think if we can find more affordable resources for them, finding frame lines that maybe, obviously we have the high-end frame lines that are, you know, $800, $2,000, but I think having frame lines that are good quality that maybe don't have a name associated with them, that could definitely be helpful as well.
Okay, thanks very much. I've got another question here. Where do you see the largest need for ODs in the future by practice type and location? So if you were going to have a new grad or have new grads come to you and say, what should we be looking at? What format? What type of practice? Where should we be practicing? What advice would you give them? Sheldon, can we start with you?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I think I would recommend the mode of practice that I'm in and looking in sort of the independent optometry category, because I think that there's as much opportunity there as you want to make it. I think once you're moving into a retail setting, you're really jumping on a hamster wheel, and you got to do high volume to kind of make the same amount of money. But I'd also let them know that they likely should expect that there will be a bit of time before they sort of ramp up in a independent setting. But once they do, when they get there, I think it's a rewarding form of practice, and it gives you a lot of flexibility in, you can kind of sort of set the way that you want to practice, the amount you want to practice. I think it's a good way to go.
Thanks, Sheldon. Maybe we'll end with asking Ken if he has any thoughts on this. I know that iRecommend has a number of new practices joining, and they're startups. Ken, do you have any thoughts on this question?
Sure. I mean, I think that Pierre made a good point earlier when he talked about 5 million Canadians that are underserviced in the eye care, in their eye care needs. I think that any and every area is a good opportunity to go into. I think you just have to do your research properly. We continually see niches and areas in the country that need more service from optometrists. And in that way, I think that there's an opportunity if the research is done right in the first place, there's a good opportunity to start a practice. It's not probably going to be a work 5 days a week practice, but it will grow into that, and it'll be a nice little spot. I mean, we've had a number of practices, as you say, where two practitioners have started, and they each work a couple days a week at that practice, and it's open 4 days. And over the course of the couple of years, it grows very nicely into something that is sustainable on its own with both people working in the practice.
Thanks, Ken. Okay, we'd like to sincerely thank our panelists for taking time out of their busy schedules and sharing their insight with us this evening, and also a warm thank you to all the participants.
So I think we had some great questions tonight, answered by the panelists, and some great questions sent to us by the audience. Unfortunately, we could not get to them all. So the ones that we didn't get to, we'll try to forward to the panelists that we think are best suited to answer them. So hopefully everyone took away something of value this evening. That was the whole purpose of organizing the thought leaders on the call tonight. And a reminder that a recording of this webinar will be posted shortly on iCareBusiness.ca. So thanks for your time and good night, everyone.
And thank you to all our sponsors as well.